So transitioning to your first time here in the Impact Zone, how was that?
That was easy. Wrestling announcing to me, I make no bones about it that I think I'm the best playoff announcer in the world. There's nobody that can touch what I do out there.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Oh, my God. Is that not the greatest thing you've ever heard? When I first saw that and people started sending me the link and I watched it, you should have heard the belly laugh that I had. That what you just heard there is only just a fraction of my actual initial reaction. Oh, you know what? It's good to laugh, right? Laughter is good medicine first thing in the morning. So puts me in a good mood. Yeah, that was Josh Matthews that you heard there. According to Josh Matthews himself, the greatest play-by-play announcer anywhere in the world. And I think we now know what it was that drove Walter White off the deep end. It was hearing the Josh Matthews clip that we just played there. So what it was, let me give some background here. It was a clip, the title of it is My First Day. So it's Josh Matthews being interviewed and talking about his very first time in TNA, leaving the other company, as he calls them, and in the video he says, I always knew, even when I worked for the other company, this is where I was going to end up. Normally you hear the other way around, where somebody in TNA says, yo, I knew one day I would end up in WWE. And Josh says, no, my goal, one day I knew that I would end up here in TNA. So basically what he's saying is, I knew I'd get shit-canned, and eventually, this is where I would end up. And he talks about being in the office for the first time in Nashville and meeting Dixie Carter. And of course, you know, he's John Gaborik's boy. He talks about John Gaborik bringing him in, all this stuff. And then the clip that you heard there where he talks about... Now, it's good to have self-confidence. I'm not saying one should not be confident in themselves. But that is quite the bold statement for Josh Matthews to make when he talks about being the best announcer in the world. Basically, the best in the world at what he does. I would like to know exactly what it is that he does. Yeah, he goes on to say that nobody can touch what I do. If talking like you've got a stick shoved so far up your ass it's coming at your eyeballs is what he does, then yes. Josh Matthews is the best in the world at what he does. You've heard me talk about Josh Matthews and his commentary style before, and the way he does this very forced... You know, we've got Drew Galloway coming down with the TNA title. I said the guy needs more fiber in his diet. He is by far the most constipated announcer in the world. So I'll give him that. He's right in that respect. Best in the world? That is quite the statement to make. I thought it was a joke until I actually watched the clip for myself on their YouTube channel. And the comments... You've got to see these. I got to read from some of these comments. This is on the TNA YouTube channel, by the way. Impact Wrestling, whatever the fuck they call it. And, you know, there's some people in there who are in support of Josh. You know, diehard TNA fans who actually like Josh. I've talked about the fact before that not only is Josh Matthews not the best play-by-play announcer in the world, he's near the bottom as one of the worst. He's fucking awful. And... there are plenty of people here in this YouTube comment section, which is on the TNA channel, who would agree with me. And the funniest thing, again, this made me laugh out loud. The name of the clip is called My First Day. And there's a comment in here from somebody saying, I can't wait to see the video. This is my last day. Fucking died when I saw that. But you look through these comments and just, you know, people saying, you know, laughing my ass off, best announcer in the biz. Byron Saxton is better than him. I wouldn't go that far. Josh, the best, probably the absolute worst in the business right now. #FireJosh, this person says. This other person says he called himself, quote, the best play-by-play announcer in the world. The man is fucking delusional. He sucks, period. Let's see here. Long story short, he sucked at the other company, and TNA took him out of pity. Not a lot of love on TNA's own channel here for Josh. You know, he's sitting there going through the comments. He probably controls all of their social media, and he's looking at this, and he's probably stewing. There's probably steam coming out of his ears. But I thought that was quite the hilarious thing there. So hopefully you've got your LOL moment of the day there with our intro. Josh Matthews, best play-by-play announcer in the world. You know, when I saw that, one of my first thoughts was, you know, is Jim Ross okay? You know, is Jim Ross okay and Michael Cole and Kevin Kelly and Mauro Ranallo, are they okay? Did they pass away? I thought they were in some sort of an accident. Maybe they were all on a bus together and the bus, you know, careened off the side of the road, because if they all passed away, then by default, I suppose you could say Josh Matthews is the best play-by-play announcer in the world. That's about the only way you can make a statement like that. But thankfully, they're all okay. They're all alive and breathing. And Josh Matthews is, he's in another world. He is in another world. This is episode 482. Of the Solomonster Sounds Off here for Sunday, February 12th, 2017. I am the Solomonster. Thank you to. I'm sorry. I just can't stop thinking about that. Oh, my eyes are actually watering right now. All right, here we go, work mode. Thank you to everyone who took part in the Sound Off survey that I linked to on Tuesday. I put a Survey Monkey poll up with a bunch of questions, and it only took about 8 hours to get over 1,000 responses. I was only allotted for 1,000. That was the limit that I had set, because they charged me per response after that. So I had visions of, like, going to bed, waking up the next morning, and just and seeing like an extra 1,000 responses. I'm like, yeah, I can't do that. So I have enough feedback as it is to go through. I wanted to just say thank you to everybody who was able to take part in that. Very helpful. Very interesting responses, too, to some of the questions. I was actually pretty surprised by how many people said they listened to the full show every week and not just parts of it. Because I always knew, you know, some people don't have time to listen to the full two and a half hours, or they don't have any interest in Lucha Underground or NXT or what have you. And over 90% of you listen to the full show every week, even if it takes you a few days to do it. I don't know why. I just thought that number would be lower. So that was actually a pleasant surprise. But I'm still going through everything. It's going to take me a while. A lot of good suggestions on how we might be able to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the Sound Off later this year. What kind of features you'd like to see more of on the show. A lot of people were terrified that this somehow meant I was changing the show in some way. One person even used that word, terrified. I guess I should be flattered, but you need not worry. I am not changing anything. I'm a big believer that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And what we're doing here seems to be working, but there's always room to grow, right? If you're not growing, you're dying. I think those are good words to live by. Audible is still offering listeners of this podcast, by the way, a free audiobook with a 30-day trial of the service. A lot of you guys in January took advantage of it. I'm always very, like, pessimistic about these things, and I'm always saying, okay, it's a new year, right? We've been doing, Audible's been a good partner to us for a while, and at some point, it's the law of diminishing returns. Everybody's used their Audible link, and it's going to start to trend down. But no, we had quite a few people use our link and sign up, get themselves a free book last month, and you could be one of them. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Doesn't have to be a wrestling book. You can pick any book you want to that they have offered. So all you have to do is go to that link, sign up. You've got to sign up, start the trial. If you decide it's not for you and you want to cancel the trial before those 30 days are up, you don't get billed one red cent. But you get to keep whatever book it is that you cashed in on. So if you want a wrestling book, The Death of WCW, Daniel Bryan's book, which apparently is amazing and I still haven't gotten to, but they have books for Steve Austin and Hulk Hogan, Chris Jericho. I can't rave enough about the Chris Jericho books. I know he's got another one coming out, but all the wrestling books he's done so far have been fantastic, and I know they have at least one of them up there on Audible. But again, tons of non-wrestling books as well. So take advantage. Get a free book on the podcast here, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Also want to say thank you to everybody who made a donation to the Sound Off, became a PayPal VIP this week, $10 or more, as you know. We'll get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on this show, $30 or more. You can get the nickname and also a quick plug for your own podcast or business. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Yvonne Bruiser Balak, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Ladies Man Levi Daly, Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo, Demolition Man Donovan McIntosh, Clean Living Chris Ludeck, Gabriel the San Diego Beer Snob Solus, Kind of a Big Deal Corey Blake, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, Mass Grave Micah Harshaw, The Montreal Mauler Patrick Pacheco, Save the World Sean Tilly, Borderline Insane Christopher Cusks, The Prince of Pleasantville Emilio Crockett, Peter Rolls-Royce Rodriguez, and Jerome Glorious King, who would like to congratulate his girlfriend, Amanda Castro, on all of her success in her nursing career. I know that he misses her. We all miss you, Amanda, seeing if we need a Z-Pack, we know exactly who to go to. And actually, one more, I gotta say thank you to the Louisville Loudmouth, Austin Speaker. I wanna say thank you to Austin for his very generous donation. There is a brand new shirt up in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees in case you missed it this week. It is a Sound Off Orlando shirt ahead of the big Orlando weekend coming up, WrestleMania weekend, the end of next month. So go to prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off and you can pick up that shirt. A lot of you got a kick out of the design. And also, if you're planning on buying the shirt, you want to wear it to Orlando, especially if we end up having a meetup. I would advise you not to wait until the last minute, because depending on where you are in the world, and even here in this country, it could take a few weeks for that shirt to arrive. So if you do want to get that shirt in advance of your trip to Orlando, if you're headed down there next month, jump on that sooner rather than later, just to make sure that you get it and there's no issues. I am, for the people who have been asking me, I know we're getting kind of close, we're only about 7 weeks away, I am planning to do a meetup. We'll not be able to do a live show this year, just time-wise and logistically. I just don't see how it's going to be possible. But I'm trying to work the details out of where and when as far as the meetup. I thought I had it nailed down, and it was going to be pre-Mania that Sunday. Now it looks like that may not work. I'm not 100% sure. It could have to wait possibly until Monday. I'm trying to make it happen before Mania, just because I know not everybody sticks around for Raw the next day, but schedule-wise, it's up in the air right now. So I'm trying to figure that out. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'll have that sorted. I'll put a Facebook invite up, and hopefully we can get the whole gang together, and I'll get to see a lot of you guys down there. Before Orlando, though, I just got to mention this. There is this Saturday, February 18th, Pro Wrestling Magic is hosting its Even Now card, 106 Bergen Avenue in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. 6 p.m. start time if you are a VIP, 6:30 for general admission. I've promoted some Pro Wrestling Magic events before. Well, not actually promoted, but I've talked about some of these Pro Wrestling Magic cards before. They're a good organization. They've brought in some big names before. A lot of people, you know, say nothing but positive things about their shows. I'm hoping to make it out for one sooner than later. But the card coming up this Saturday has Hardcore Holly on the show. One of my favorite interviews of all the ones I've done is with Bob. I'm kind of bummed because I don't think I'll be able to make it. I'd love to be able to meet the guy, but he'll be taking on Keith Lee. Paul London takes on JT Dunn. Ace Romero battles Bulldozer Matt Tremont. Also the debut of The Danger Zone, which is listed here as an intermission stunt show spectacular. Sounds kind of dangerous. And much more. So tickets start at just $20. I can't say this enough. If you've got indie wrestling coming to your town, I can't imagine you're ever going to go to an indie show and be bored or not have fun or be able to interact with the guys when they come out and that sort of thing. So for $20, I mean, come on. It's a steal. So just go to wrestlingismagic.com to get your tickets right now. Some sad news. Chavo Guerrero Sr., the father of Chavo Jr. and the brother of the late Eddie Guerrero, died yesterday at the age of 68. Chavo Jr. posted on Instagram that his dad had just been diagnosed with liver cancer early last month. He was admitted into hospice care about a week ago. Apparently, he did not want anybody to know. He became a big name feuding with Roddy Piper in the late 70s, which would explain... I didn't realize at first. I saw Mauro Ranallo posted a Rest in Peace tweet, and he mentioned, you know, Roddy Piper will be there at the pearly gates to welcome you in. And I didn't immediately get the connection, but, you know, him and Piper had this big feud that really put both of them on the map, at least out west, many, many years ago. He also became the oldest cruiserweight champion ever in WWE back in 2004. That was back during his Chavo Classic phase, which I think a lot of newer fans, that's probably the way they would remember him, which is kind of sad in a way. But I thought he was very entertaining as Chavo Classic. He pinned his own son to win the championship by accident. He also had something in common with Kevin Federline. Believe it or not, I know there's two names you never thought you'd hear in the same sentence, but... the both of them each have an unavenged win, not just a win, but an unavenged win over John Cena. And granted, this one came in a handicap match, and he wasn't even the one to score the winning fall. But still, a win is a win. The Chavo Classic run really didn't last very long. I know he no-showed a bunch of dates. He ended up getting fired. Most recently, he popped up on Lucha Underground. This is only a few months ago. He was on for a couple of episodes. He was part of the whole feud between his son and Rey Mysterio. He turned on Rey. He was also one of the defendants in that ongoing concussion lawsuit that was brought against WWE. You know, when you talk about great wrestling families, the Guerreros are obviously, I mean, they're way up near the top of the list. I was thinking about it, though, in terms of, like, WWE... But again, I mean, you talk about wrestling families, you think of the Guerreros, you think of the Harts, the Funks, the Briscoes, the Von Erichs, right? The Samoans. But I was thinking about this more so in terms of WWE. And I'd be curious to get your feedback too. You know, when you think of the top families in WWE history, besides the McMahons, obviously, they would be at the top. What's the first family you think of? When you think of specifically that company, right? Or you know, the families that have had over the years the most success. Because I always thought, well, it's the Hart family, right? But I would think, as I think more about this, that it would have to be everybody from that frickin' Samoan family tree. I mean, there's been so many of them, and some of them have gone on Yokozuna, The Rock, they've become champion, you know, Roman Reigns. But then, yeah, I think of the Harts, I think of the Guerreros. Eddie was obviously... the biggest star of the bunch when it came to WWE. But Chavo spent a lot of years there. I mean, he was on that roster for a long, long time. He was a tag champion. He was a cruiserweight champion. They brought in Chavo Sr. for his run. Vicky got a job there after Eddie passed away. And she got over in that GM role as a heel more than anybody ever could have imagined. And she spent some good amount of time there as well. Even Eddie's daughter, Shawl, spent some time in developmental. And if you really want to get technical about it, Aiden English of the Vaudevillains, he's married to Eddie's daughter, which makes him now part of the Guerrero family. He's an honorary Guerrero. Doesn't have the skin tone for it, but he is an honorary Guerrero. So there's been a lot of Guerrero influence in WWE over the years, but I think if you rank them, I'd probably have to put, again, all of these come after the McMahons, but I'd probably have to put the Samoans at the top and then the Harts, and probably underneath the Harts would be the Guerreros. In fact, I believe Aiden English is part of the card tonight. WWE Elimination Chamber live from my favorite arena, the Talking Stick Arena in Phoenix, Arizona. Let's run down the card real quick and do predictions here. They have added Curt Hawkins against Mojo Rawley on the kickoff show. So I may conveniently forget to watch the kickoff show. Mojo Rawley's the one they're really giving the push to right now. He's been the beneficiary, I think, of Zack Ryder going down with the injury. They're actually trying to do something with Mojo. I've enjoyed listening to him speak and learning more about his background the couple of times I've seen him on Talking Smack. I can't say his matches do much for me, but, you know, he's fine, and he's still very inexperienced. He was called up way sooner than he should have been, I think. I'm no talent scout, but it's very obvious to me that NXT, you know, was originally conceptually designed for people like him, people like him and Dana Brooke, who are not very good at this, do not have a lot of years doing this, who could have really benefited, I think, from spending more time down there before they were called up to the main roster. And to me, we've just seen so many people over the years that have been called up to the main roster who clearly were not ready for that spot. I think of guys like Chris Masters, and look what happened to them. And it's a shame, because they say you only get one chance to make a really good first impression. And it's such an important thing, and if you fall flat on your face, it may not even be your fault, but that could be the end of you. You know, that you could be the next Rene Dupree or Chris Masters, and that would be a shame. But Mojo, I think he's doing the best he can with it, and I don't see him losing to Curt Hawkins. The way to get this guy over is not to have him losing matches to freaking Curt Hawkins. No offense to Curt Hawkins. So Mojo's my pick for that match. For the first time in WWE history, there will be three women's singles matches on a single pay-per-view card. I cannot remember that ever happening before. We have Mickie James taking on Becky Lynch. My pick is Mickie James. She's, you know, fresh on the SmackDown brand, back in the main roster. I think that she will get the win here before Becky ultimately gets her revenge. We're not at that point yet, so Mickie is my pick. Nikki Bella against Natalya. This has been simmering now for a few months, and Natalya seems to always be attacking Nikki, and she's had some really brutal things to say about her on TV. Although that segment from I'll talk about that segment from Tuesday after, but that was cringe. But I think it's time for Nikki to get her win back, and then that sets her up for whatever they have her doing at WrestleMania, which is possibly teaming with John Cena. So Nikki Bella is my pick. We have Alexa Bliss defending her SmackDown Women's Championship against Naomi. Naomi has what, about two pinfall wins now, I think, over Alexa. I think Alexa's due for a win here. And I would not take the title off her now anyway. I think that would be insane. I think she's doing a fantastic job. Alexa Bliss, I was just talking about Mojo Rawley probably benefiting from spending more time down in NXT. Alexa Bliss has done an incredible job, I think, since being called up from NXT. She, just on the microphone and her mannerisms, the way she carries herself. I mean, in the ring, I think she's pretty good too. But it's not even just like being in the ring. It's just the whole package, right? The whole presentation and how she carries herself. She carries herself like a freaking star. I think she's done a tremendous job. So she's kind of at the other spectrum of it, where clearly I think she was ready for prime time, and she was given the chance, and I think she's knocked it out of the park. And I would definitely not take the championship off of her right now. So she's my pick to win. Dolph Ziggler battles Kalisto and Apollo Crews in a 2-on-1 handicap match. This is completely ass backwards. This whole fucking thing is ass backwards. You've got the heel, or the guy who's supposed to be the heel anyway, but keeps getting cheered every time he beats the babyfaces down with a freaking chair. You've got the heel at a disadvantage against two babyfaces. Two babyfaces who keep getting their asses handed to them. Very weird booking here. So I guess I'm supposed to be rooting for Dolph Ziggler to overcome the odds, and I think he will. Dolph Ziggler is my pick to win. We have Randy Orton battling Luke Harper one-on-one here. Randy Orton, of course, he's already punched his ticket to the main event of WrestleMania. And by main event, I mean second or third down from the top. I think it'll be a good match. I'll have more later to say about Luke Harper. I've really enjoyed him kind of being more focused on now more than ever. And I think there could be big things for him in the future. They'd have to kind of tweak the character a little bit, but can't walk around in that dirty white shirt for the rest of your career looking like T.L. Hopper. But I think they'll have a good, I think it'll be a good match. I think Randy Orton gets the win. I guess there's no harm if he got the loss. He's still going to WrestleMania, but that's kind of foolish. But you know, then again, it's not as though we haven't seen guys who are on their way to the championship match at WrestleMania lose. The month before, Steve Austin did to Triple H many years ago. I'm sure there's been other examples of it. So it's not that Randy Orton is a foregone conclusion. I just don't see the benefit to having him lose after he was pinned clean in the middle by John Cena on SmackDown this week. So Randy Orton is my pick. He should win. We have American Alpha defending their SmackDown tag team titles in a tag team turmoil match. Yeah, I'm looking at the rest of this division. I see absolutely no reason to take the titles off of American Alpha. The Ascension got a win on TV this week. I cannot see the Ascension winning the titles. They just wanted to create this impression that, hey, everybody has a chance to win, bullshit. Everybody does not have it. It's like in the Royal Rumble when they used to say, everybody has a chance to win, right? It's every man for himself. Frickin' Virgil could win the Royal Rumble. Yeah, okay. The Ascension are not winning the tag team titles. But I hear tag team turmoil. I think of the very first time they ever used that term for one of these matches, the very first tag team turmoil match in WWE, which was SummerSlam 1999. And that was a really fun match. And I'm not just saying this because, you know, this is the tag team turmoil match, and so I went back and watched the old one. I actually do want to go back and watch the old one, but I still remember the old one. When I think back to SummerSlam 99, there's a few things I think of. I think of the weird main event and everything that happened there. I think of The Rock shoving Billy Gunn's face into that large woman's ass. Okay, that was a Jim Ross quote. And I think of the tag team turmoil match because I just remember watching it thinking, man, that was a really fun match. Maybe I just didn't expect it to be going in. I don't know. I don't even remember all the teams who were in there. I just know the APA one. So that was a fun match. But American Alpha is going to win this. I think it would be a great time to debut a new team. They haven't exactly announced all the names, I think, of all the teams. It's just one team gets beat, the next one comes out. One team gets beat, the next one comes out. That's how it works. And so you could, in theory, just have a kind of a mystery spot where a new team comes out. And I think it would be the perfect place to debut the Revival. And if they did that, then I would be okay with them taking the tag team titles. Revival comes out as a surprise team. They win the belts. Hell of a way to make your debut. They go into WrestleMania defending maybe in some kind of four-way or something like that. That's how I would do it. I think it's the perfect spot for them. But I know that they're on the TakeOver card WrestleMania weekend. They're still fighting for the NXT tag team titles. So that does not look very likely. And finally, it's the Elimination Chamber match for the WWE Championship. John Cena defending against AJ Styles, Bray Wyatt, Dean Ambrose, The Miz, and Baron Corbin. Now, for weeks, the rumor has been that Wyatt is going to win the belt to set up a match with Randy Orton at WrestleMania. And it makes sense. And I do think that's what's going to happen. And not just because that's been the rumor, but Randy Orton wins. He's been doing this storyline with the Wyatts. It kind of makes sense for Bray to win the belt and to finally create some tension between the two. So I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And I think it would be nice to finally see Bray Wyatt win the big one. I really do. I think after all the injuries and all of the bipolar booking of his character, really going back to the loss to John Cena at WrestleMania 30, because I think they were doing a pretty good job with Bray up until that point. And then it just sort of, I don't know, it just, the stuff with the Wyatts and the Shield, that came right before, I believe, right? That I think that was right before WrestleMania 30. So up until that point, like, it was cool what they were doing with Bray Wyatt. And the Wyatts actually came out on the winning end, I believe, of that feud. At least of the match they had on pay-per-view. I know they had a rematch on Raw a few weeks later. I don't remember who won. But once he lost to John Cena at WrestleMania 30, I don't know. It was very bipolar with him. It was very up and down, more down than up. I do think that he's getting the title. I do think they'll plant the seed in this match for something between Miz and John Cena, to set up the rumored John Cena, Nikki Bella versus Miz Maurice match at WrestleMania. And they could, and I think should, plant the seed for something between Dean Ambrose and Baron Corbin. Because I said last week when I was talking about Dean Ambrose, he's kind of the odd man out. When you hear rumors about all these WrestleMania plans, the guy is one of the bigger stars in the company. He's the Intercontinental Champion. And they seemingly have no big plans for him. So what do you do with Dean Ambrose? Well, instead of just sticking him in some multi-man match for the IC belt, I look at that SmackDown roster and I say Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin is a guy who they've really been given the football to run with here. And I think he's been doing a pretty bang-up job. And I think that this match tonight could be a real star-making performance for Corbin if he hangs in there for a while. He's not going to win, but they could set the stage for him and Ambrose to do something going into WrestleMania, and that could be your Intercontinental Championship match of Mania. So, if that is the case, that leaves AJ Styles as kind of the odd man out, which I think really sucks. And, you know, I see a lot of people very hot and bothered by this whole Kevin Owens-Goldberg thing. Oh, he's going to get squashed. This sucks. This is terrible. Blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm more bothered by them not having anything worthwhile for AJ Styles than I am potentially jobbing Kevin Owens out to Goldberg for the belt at the next Raw pay-per-view, which I'm going to talk about that in a second. But the AJ thing, honestly, bothers me more. And so if it is AJ against Shane McMahon, you know, to them, Shane McMahon is a big star. And so I guess in their eyes, hey, AJ would be in one of the big featured matches at WrestleMania, just like Undertaker last year, right? It was Undertaker against Shane. What's good for The Undertaker, I guess, is good for AJ Styles. I just think it's a waste. I think it's a waste of his talent and what he could do in there with somebody else who's a hell of a lot more capable than Shane McMahon, who almost died in the ring at Survivor Series. Monday Night Raw was live from Portland, Oregon this past Monday. Raw Twitter poll, over 2,000 of you voted. 60% thumbs up, 40% thumbs down. This makes two or three weeks in a row now that Raw has been more thumbs up than thumbs down, I believe. It appears, as the rumors go, that WWE is operating under the assumption that Seth Rollins will be good to go for WrestleMania. So this is a follow-up to the story from last week, where it didn't look very good, and the rumor was he had an MCL tear in his knee. He might be out up to 8 weeks, and that was exactly with 8 weeks to go until WrestleMania. And so, man, the snow is falling out. So I don't know if you can hear that, but that is... This snow or hail or whatever that's whipping around outside, my God. The match with Triple H was in doubt. It was in jeopardy. We didn't know if Seth Rollins was going to be able to make it back in time. And my attitude is still the same. My attitude has not changed. If he indeed has an MCL tear, and now he does, it's been confirmed that's exactly what the injury is. And I guess for most normal people, that's about an 8 week recovery time. I just think you're cutting it awfully close to WrestleMania. I just think you come up with Plan B and you push off the Triple H Rollins match for another day. That's the second MCL tear in the same knee. I hope they know more than they're letting out about the severity of it. Maybe it's not as bad. I mean, I always hope that that's the case. But if it's not, and if it's an 8 week recovery and they're playing with fire here, I mean, I know he's got pro wrestler healing powers. I'm sure he'll do everything in his power to get back in time. Believe me, Seth Rollins does not want to miss two WrestleManias in a row. But I think they're cutting it awfully close, and it's kind of stupid, I think, for them to not have a plan B, so hopefully they have one. Although, I don't know what that would be. That's the thing. I mean, plan B that I talked about last week would have been Shane McMahon. But if they're saying, well, Rollins is good to go for WrestleMania, then Shane's going to be programmed with AJ or someone else. It's, you know, you get close to Mania, you're not going to have anybody left. That's why I said, you got to make a decision early. Are we doing this or not? And I think it would be safer not to, but they're going to move ahead with it. So that's the plan. Samoa Joe opened Raw in a suit and tie. He ended it with a pinfall win over Roman Reigns. Not a bad night. Now, granted, it took interference to do it. I can't say that that part thrilled me, but a win is a win. And besides both being former NXT champions, I thought this was kind of interesting. I didn't see anybody else mention this, but Samoa Joe and Finn Balor now share something else in common. They both have pinfall wins over Roman Reigns in their Raw debut. Mick Foley and Stephanie McMahon introduced Joe. Foley was not happy about having to do this after what Joe did to Rollins the week before, which makes sense. If I was the Raw GM, I would be pissed if this new guy put one of my top stars on the shelf heading into my biggest show of the year. Joe came out in a suit, cut, I thought, a hell of a promo. Think about Samoa Joe. He comes out, he looks like a badass, he walks like a badass, he sounds like a badass, he's got the bass in his voice, he's a great promo. And he showed that here. He said it took him 18 years to make it here. It was Triple H who gave him that opportunity, not Mick Foley, despite how much of a fan Mick Foley claimed to be of Samoa Joe. Joe signed the Raw contract that they had brought out for him, which officially makes him a member of the Raw roster and kills my whole free agent idea that I came up with. Oh, well. This is my my sad face here. So that's when the other Samoan named Joe came to the ring. He talked about this being his yard, which may be foreshadowing for the Undertaker match at WrestleMania. That's when they made the main event of Samoa Joe against Roman Reigns. You know the other reason why I was happy to just see him pick up the win over Roman, even if it was by distraction? Because I remember them giving away another big first-time match for free on Raw back in 99. It was Steve Austin against The Big Show, back when they were still calling him Paul White. He had only been in the company for maybe like a month. They gave that match away for free on TV a week before WrestleMania, like 6 days before WrestleMania. And they had Steve Austin pin him clean in the middle with a Stone Cold Stunner. For no good reason. Austin didn't need that win. Not over the Giant. They did it because they could. So I had visions in my head of Roman flying through the air with a Superman punch, followed by a spear and a pin, just because they could. And they didn't do that. I'm sure they wanted to. I can bet your ass they would have loved to. You know, but they didn't. So good for them. Am I grading on a curve? Maybe a little bit. But good for them. They did the right thing. Nia Jax pinned Bayley with the Samoan drop after Charlotte ran down for the distraction. Sure looks like we're headed for a four-way for the championship at WrestleMania. I could see them doing, so we got one more pay-per-view to go. I could see them doing a Charlotte Nia Jax against Sasha Bayley tag team match at Fastlane to set things up. Braun Strowman destroyed four jobbers, one of whom was smart enough to run for his life to the back midway through the match. And so Braun stacked up the other three for the pin. Then he went to the back to complain to Mick Foley that he wanted competition. He wanted real competition. So they rehashed their own storyline from 2 months ago. And Foley gave him Roman Reigns at Fastlane, which made Braun very happy. We'll see if he's still happy about that after the outcome. Akira Tozawa is finally here. He got himself over in his very first night with that ha-ha-ha thing he does to psych himself up. One of the few cruiserweights to get a real reaction. He beat Drew Gulak with the snap German suplex. No one does it better than Akira Tozawa. Brian Kendrick came out afterwards to shake hands with him. And Kendrick, he beat Lince Dorado on 205 Live. I did watch 205 Live this week. He beat Lince the next night, called out on Tozawa. Hey, Tozawa, come on down, right? I guess Tozawa is all of a sudden his new best friend. So he called for him to come out. Instead, he got Tajiri, who I believe he had started feuding with before Tajiri got hurt. He got hurt some kind of leg or knee injury, I think, a few weeks ago. But he's back now. And Tajiri blew mist in Kendrick's eyes, and Kendrick sold the hell out of it. And Tajiri was also out there getting a pretty good response from the crowd. I remember when Tajiri first came back, I was like, man, this crowd is very indifferent towards him. But the people like to see Tajiri this week, so that was cool. Or as Steve Austin used to call him, and possibly still does, Tajiri. Remember when Tajiri dressed up as Santa Claus? This was back during like the invasion days. Steve Austin just called him Tajiri Claus over and over again. Tajiri Claus, get over here, Tajiri Claus. Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens came out. Jericho put Tom Brady on the list for stealing his nickname as the GOAT, greatest of all time, which he is, by the way, after that Super Bowl win. I don't think that can be denied any longer. The crowd popped when he put Brady on the list. They popped again when he called him a stupid idiot. Jericho called for him against Kevin Owens, champion versus champion of the WrestleMania main event. And Kevin Owens agreed and said that it would be the biggest match in WrestleMania history. But, God, you know, I don't know if I could fight my friend. That's what he said. What was this, UFC now? Fight your fucking friend. Goldberg came out. For whom the bell tolls, Kevin Owens. For whom the bell tolls. He told them to either step aside or grow a pair, take him on and see if they live. You could see why he's the most popular babyface on the roster. See, imagine if he had come out there and he read Green Eggs and Ham or talked about Jack and the fucking Beanstalk. I know they don't have Roman doing that stuff anymore, but you don't realize how much damage that kind of stuff did to him. People, you know, I've gotten email questions. Where did it all go wrong for Roman Reigns? What was the one moment where it went wrong for Roman? I don't know if I could pinpoint one singular moment. I guess if I had to, if you put a gun to my head, it would go back to that Royal Rumble in 2015, and it ties in with Daniel Bryan and what they did to him, and it really wasn't Roman's fault. But I don't think it's any one moment. I think it's a collection of fuck-ups with this guy. And he's such an easy guy to promote and to book, right? He's this big badass looking dude with this big arm tattoo, wearing a freaking Kevlar vest, you know, the slick back, long black hair. You don't have to do much with this guy, right? I always said silent but deadly, silent but deadly. But what did they do? They sent him out there. He was just atrocious with this material that they would send him out there with. And on top of that, he really wasn't very good sometimes when they would throw him out there on the mic, or he was very awkward. He's better now, but the material they would send this guy out there with, and I would read, you know, like Vince McMahon is personally writing this guy stuff, and that's the kiss of death. That is the kiss of death. So he goes out there and he tells these nursery rhymes and he looks into the hard camera and he winks. Oh, God, the douche chills I got watching that. You don't realize how much damage that stuff did to this guy. I know they don't do it anymore, but that's lasting damage. And with the part-time guys, at least, Vince seems to have the sense to back off and book them as killers. He does it with Lesnar, and now he's doing it with Goldberg. Goldberg accepted Paul Heyman's challenge to fight Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, so they're going to get their chance to make up for that debacle in Madison Square Garden all those years ago, as opposed to the debacle at Madison Square Garden this past week with Charles Oakley. I'm not sure which was the bigger debacle, actually, that or the WrestleMania 20 match. Owens said Brock versus Goldberg would make for the perfect undercard match for Jericho versus Owens at WrestleMania, which got a laugh out of me. I like that line. He said his match with Jericho would be the main event. I have a better chance of headlining WrestleMania than that match does, okay? This all led to Goldberg challenging Kevin Owens to a championship match at Fastlane. Jericho stepped in. He was about to put Goldberg on the list when Goldberg grabbed the list and the pen out of Jericho's hand and put himself on the list. And Jericho said, "I never liked you, Goldberg," which is true. He did take Goldberg down to front face lock once backstage. Remember that? Jericho has now gotten into backstage fights with both Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. And lived to tell about it. That's the balls of Jericho right there. And just when it looked like Jericho was about to make the match between himself and Goldberg for Fastlane, he swerved everybody, including his best friend, and he made the match Goldberg against Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship. I did not realize that Chris Jericho was the co-general manager of Raw, but I guess he is. He has the power to make championship matches now. And it's not even his title. Kevin Owens was, as you can imagine, not pleased with this at all, probably because he got a sneak peek at the early betting odds for that match. I said this on Twitter, and some people got upset, but that's just too bad. Goldberg should win the championship at Fastlane, and he should do so in 3 minutes or less. You have Chris Jericho, of course, try to interfere, but it backfires, so that helps move things along towards Jericho Owens at WrestleMania. And Goldberg defends the championship against Brock Lesnar in the main event of WrestleMania. Right? Clearly, the only way Owens wins that match is if Brock Lesnar runs in and screws Goldberg. And maybe he does. Maybe he is so blinded by rage and just the embarrassment of being beaten in a minute 26 at Survivor Series and the embarrassment of being eliminated from the Royal Rumble by this guy that he's just, I've got to fuck this guy over. And he screws him out of the championship, and that gives him all the satisfaction that he wants. Okay, maybe that's what happens. But here's the thing. Goldberg came out, the first thing he did here on the show was he said, "I do," right? He said, "I do," to the marriage proposal, basically, for WrestleMania. So the match is made. Why screw this guy out of the championship when you could just win the championship from him at WrestleMania? Isn't that not the best revenge? Is it, like, in theory, the title brings money. Brock's all about the money. He's all about the money, all about the power. It makes little sense, I think, to do it any other way. I never did understand why Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar, you know, their characters, they never seemed overly concerned about getting that belt back after Rollins cashed in Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 31. Now, I know there was a rematch, I think, at some other pay-per-view many months later, but it's like they lost the championship. Brock never did get pinned. He never did get directly beaten for the belt. And it just never seemed to be a concern after that. He just comes out every few months, he faces a new guy, and he goes home. So it's like the championship didn't mean fuck all to this guy. He should want to get that belt back. He was never beaten for it. So again, I just think it makes a hell of a lot more sense to just let Goldberg win the belt, and then, you know, in Brock's mind, in Heyman's mind, right, his client will now win the championship back that he rightfully never lost at WrestleMania. And again, Goldberg and Brock is the biggest match on that card. We don't know all the matches yet, but that, I'm looking at this card. the rumored card, the probable card. It is the biggest match on that show. You don't have to like either guy. It is the biggest attraction right now for WrestleMania 33. And I think it should be for the championship. Kevin Owens against Chris Jericho. I love them both. But that is not the main event of WrestleMania. I appreciate the fact that, like, Wyatt and Orton, right? This is a storyline that's been playing out over a period of many months. I like that. But it is not the WrestleMania main event. With or without the championship, that is not the WrestleMania main event. Gallows and Anderson retained their tag team titles by DQ over Sheamus and Cesaro when Enzo Amore and Big Cass got involved. They were at ringside. And Gallows attacked Enzo, which led to Cass attacking Gallows, which led to the DQ. So a smart play there by the heels, although Sheamus and Cesaro were not happy with Kaz and Enzo for getting involved. They did some stuff with the New Day and the Shining Stars. I had no fucks to give for this. I tried. I reached into both my pants pockets. I looked under the couch cushions. I checked the closets. I searched high and low, and I could not find a single fuck to give for any of this. So I have nothing to say about it. Jericho was interviewed by Chuck backstage and denied any cracks in the friendship between him and Kevin Owens. In fact, they are going to have a festival of friendship, whatever the fuck that is, on Raw tomorrow night. And I heard this, and I wondered, you know, the first thing I pictured in my head when I heard Festival of Friendship, and I don't know, maybe if you guys did too, I thought of Liu Kang, the Liu Kang friendship rainbow from Mortal Kombat. It's the first thing I thought of. Kevin Owens told Jericho, "I got your back tonight," because Jericho was defending the U.S. title against Sami Zayn. I thought for sure they were going to do a title change here. I couldn't understand why they were doing it here and now waiting until Fastlane, but I heard, okay, championship match, and I said, well, this has got to be where they do the turn, right? Because Kevin Owens is going to kind of accidentally on purpose cost Jericho the belt after Jericho just signed him basically to his, the death of his title run against Goldberg. But it didn't happen. Jericho and Sammy had a match. Referee's back was turned at one point. Owens from the outside super kicked Sammy right in the face, and Jericho hit the code breaker and got the win. So he retains the U.S. Championship, and I was surprised by that. I thought that was ripe for a title change, but I guess they're going to hold off on that. They announced the Rock and Roll Express for the WWE Hall of Fame this year, this coming off their cameo in the tag team Apocalypto at the Hardy compound. So that makes Kurt Angle and the Rock and Roll Express so far, with Rick Rude also being rumored to be going in. That's a pretty strong class so far. That is a pretty strong Hall of Fame class so far, I would say, in terms of names that belong in there. Ricky and Robert, you know, they've been around forever. They were huge in Mid-South and in Jim Crockett Promotions. They had their legendary feud with Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express. There's been some debate I've seen online about who should induct them. Jim Cornette's name, I see his name popping up a lot. I think there's a better chance of Vince McMahon bringing back Vince Russo to book WrestleMania this year than there is him bringing Cornette in to induct those guys. Not that I don't think Cornette one day will make his way into the Hall of Fame, but I just don't see them calling him this year. There's just no way. To me, the name that seems the most realistic would make the most sense from people they have available is Jerry Lawler. Jerry Lawler was the one who first put the two of them together as a team in Memphis. Right? They wouldn't be a team, it sounds like, were it not for Jerry Lawler, since he was the one that put the two of them together. So I don't know that they would do that, because Lawler is, you know, he's got his gig as the MC of the ceremony. He's the host. Would they let him be a presenter as well? I don't see why not, but I don't know if they want to do that. But they should. I think Lawler would be the most appropriate. Sasha Banks was backstage getting her knee worked on by the trainer. That seems to be her new gimmick. Charlotte sauntered by and said that she hoped she saw Bayley lose to Nia Jax earlier in the night, since Bayley said she was fighting in Sasha's honor. Next week in Las Vegas, it's Charlotte against Bayley for the championship, and she hopes that Sasha watches her beat her best friend. What a bitch. She then mentioned that awful roadblock end-of-the-line name. She said, I had no idea that roadblock end-of-the-line would end up being a metaphor for your career. And she walked off. Sasha keeps doing those topes in all of her matches. It will be the end of the line for her. Austin Aries conducted an in-ring interview with the Cruiserweight champion, Neville. Aries, by the way, has been cleared to return. which means that we could very well end up seeing Neville against Austin Aries for the championship at WrestleMania. I still think it probably ends up being like a multi-man match. I think instead of the IC title being multi-man like it was last year, I think we get Ambrose and Corbin, and I think the Cruiserweights are probably going to end up being stuck in a multi-man match. Unless they want to book Aries as the babyface, then you have babyface versus heel, him versus Neville. I guess that could work. But I didn't know. I wasn't sure if the orbital bone break would be healed in time for WrestleMania. So that's great news. It would be Aries' very first WrestleMania after nearly 20 years in the business. Aries was one of the names that was considered for that season of Tough Enough that Steve Austin hosted. That was the one that Big Andy won. Remember Big Andy? No? Okay, most people don't. And I've heard different stories about exactly what happened here. I mean, the story that I heard was there was a list that the production company that put the show together had made on their own. And there were a bunch of indie guys on there, and Austin Aries had made the list. And when WWE and Kevin Dunn and whoever got a look at the list, they said, no, 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 no. And they blew the list up. They took most, if not all, of the independent guys off, and they put a lot of people on there that had no prior wrestling experience because that's the kind of people they were looking for. They were looking for beautiful people who, you know, would make for good reality TV. And so Aries kind of got fucked over on that whole thing. But I've heard either he auditioned but was rejected. And then I've heard that story where he made the production company's list, but then WWE took him off. So whatever you choose to believe, he didn't make the final cut. And that was, what, in 2011. I mean, that's ridiculous. Even by 2011, Aries was awesome. You know, he was one of the better guys out there. And I mean, yeah, he's on the smaller side, but so what? I mean, Aries, he's a great wrestler, but he's got personality too. I don't, you know, it's not like he's a dull person or anything. I think he's got a lot of charisma. I think he would have actually been a lot of fun to watch on that show. You know, it would have been weird, I will say. You know, you see a guy like him who's got so many years of experience in pro wrestling and he's had success in other companies, Ring of Honor and TNA. For him to have to go through a show like Tough Enough to get into the company, it's kind of a slap in the face. But, you know, he applied, and I think the fact that he got rejected doesn't speak very well to WWE, and it took him many more years now to finally make it to the company. They've had to change their philosophy in many ways in terms of the people they bring in, because believe me, you would not be seeing people like Austin Aries and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in WWE if this were 2010 or 2011 or even 2012. I've said before, you know, Punk and Bryan, man, Punk and Bryan getting over the way they did, they opened a lot of doors for these guys. These guys owe those two a lot, because I don't think without them getting over the way they did that we would be seeing this right now. And maybe some of you guys hate that. Maybe you're like, ah, fuck them. That's their fault. But I think it's good. I mean, I think there's a lot of really capable, talented guys who are getting a shot now who never would have gotten that shot. And I think that's a good thing. So it's been a long road for Aries. It's very cool to see him on TV now, you know, getting to do his thing. Speaking of the Cruiserweights, I watched the 205 live main event this week. The five-way was an elimination match. Jack Gallagher beat TJ Perkins, Mustafa Ali, Cedric Alexander, and Noam Dar. I thought it was great. I thought that was easily the best Cruiserweight match I have seen since the tournament ended. So either on Raw or 205 Live, this was easily the best. It'll be Gallagher against Neville for the championship at Fastlane. And you know, now they have Akira Tozawa in, finally. Grand Metalik is apparently supposed to be making his debut this week. Austin Aries now coming back from his injury. I think things are going to really start to pick up now with that division, because that division has really been, in my opinion, it's been kind of on life support now for a long, long time. Now, finally, I think this might just be what they need to kind of resuscitate it and get people really excited about it. And hopefully this was a sign of things to come, this kind of match that we saw this week. So last week, after 125 days had passed since the very first Emelina vignette aired on TV, I decided to start counting the days every single week until she finally debuted. I put them on notice. I said, I'm going to do, I guess it wouldn't be a countdown, it's more like a count up of all the days that have passed since that very first Emelina is coming, Emelina is premiering vignette that they put on TV. Today, as I record this here, today marks 132 days since that first video aired. And so naturally, as soon as I start counting, the very next day, WWE goes and puts out a video claiming that Emelina will finally be making her debut this Monday night. You're welcome. Although I shouldn't take credit just yet. They've done this before. I'm at the point now where I won't believe a damn thing until I see it with my own eyes. So, you know, just because they said she's debuting tomorrow night, I expect her to. What she'll look like and what the gimmick will be and all that, I have no idea. I just have flashbacks to the Funkasaurus, but it's not a guarantee that she will be making her debut tomorrow night. We'll see. We'll see. Main event was Samoa Joe 1 against Samoa Joe 2. I already talked about this earlier. I enjoyed the match. Joe hit all of his usual spots. Reigns was setting up for the win with a spear when Braun Strowman's music hit. He came out. Roman knocked him off the apron with a Superman punch. Joe caught him with a kick to the back of the head. Threw him into the ropes. He caught him coming off with a giant Uranage for the win. And by the way, I don't think the Muscle Buster is banned. I've seen different news sites pick up on this, and we don't know, but the fact that he hasn't used the Muscle Buster in either of his appearances yet means nothing. Does not mean the move is banned. I don't believe it's banned. There's no reason for it to be banned. If it was going to be banned because, oh, he injured Tyson Kidd with it, it would have been banned 2 years ago. Okay, and he's been using it ever since. So, no, I don't believe it's banned. But he used a Uranage here for the win. And Samoa Joe pins Roman Reigns in his Monday Night Raw debut. Not a bad night for him at all. After the match, Braun Strowman killed Roman Reigns dead with a running power slam through the barricade. He got chance of thank you, Strowman, for this vicious, heinous assault. But by all means, put Reigns in there with The Undertaker. I'm sure that's just what he needs to get the people to finally respect him. SmackDown Live. Let's talk about SmackDown here. Over 1,500 votes on Twitter. 85% thumbs up, 15% thumbs down. Daniel Bryan came out to a hero's welcome from his hometown fans in Seattle. In fact, it was 1 year ago in that very building. He was forced to retire. Miz and Maryse interrupted to massive heel heat. He really is the best heel in the company right now, right up there with Charlotte and Roman Reigns. Miz mocked him for not being able to wrestle anymore and said he couldn't understand why you're even still around considering you cannot wrestle. And Bryan then dropped the line of the year so far and said, not being able to wrestle never stopped you from getting in the ring. I believe that's what they call a mic drop. The only thing that could have made this better was if someone capped it as a gif and did the deal where a pair of sunglasses kind of come down onto Bryan's face with the words, deal with it, underneath. Maybe somebody can whip that up. That was a sick burn. Baron Corbin, Dean Ambrose, AJ Styles, they all ended up coming out. Pretty much everybody in that Elimination Chamber match, except for John Cena and Bray Wyatt, came out. And this led to a fatal four-way being announced on the spot. So they had a four-way match, and Corbin won with the End of Days to AJ Styles. AJ Styles took the losing fall here. I did not like that. Especially because I'm fairly certain he's not winning the championship tonight either. But they continue to elevate Corbin. I guess they feel, you know, to do so, he's got to get wins over big names. I mean, not that he beat John Cena a few weeks ago. John Cena beat him clean with the five-knuckle shuffle and the FU. But I guess in their eyes, you've got to have him beat AJ, give him some credibility. We got a rare backstage solo promo from Luke Harper. Finally, we're getting to hear more from this guy. I think if they ever get away from the Wyatt gimmick, if they get him away from the dirty shirt and the scraggly beard, or at least trim it, underneath all of that, I think is somebody that has superstar potential. Maybe not with that look and that character, but there's a guy under there who's very talented, who can talk, who I think can get over in a way that a lot of people would be very surprised by, because we've seen this guy look a certain way for so long that I think if you just change certain things about him here and there, and just basically give him a little bit of a gimmick overhaul, you could have a real superstar on your hands. And I think we're finally starting to see, you know, what this guy is capable of. He's not just some guy who, he's a good wrestler and he, you know, he's got weird eyes. No, he can talk, he can, you know, he can do all that stuff. They had Tom Phillips interview Natalya and Nikki Bella via split screen. Nikki and Natalya were really going at it here. Nikki said Natalya was dead to her. Natalya said Nikki has no friends, and that no amount of makeup could cover up the damage that she does to her at Elimination Chamber when she exposes her as a bad wrestler. Nikki called her a legit crazy cat lady. Natalya then said Nikki will never have kids of her own, and that if she wasn't married to Tyson, that John Cena would probably leave Nikki for her. And Nikki had enough at that point, walked out on the interview. This was every high school fight between girls that you've ever seen. Apollo Crews pinned Dolph Ziggler in about a minute with the roll-up. I say the roll-up because that's a patented move here in WWE. It's no longer a roll-up. It is the roll-up. Ziggler then attacked him again with a chair after the match. You know, rinse, repeat with these guys. They're just doing the same shit over and over and over again. And by the way, you know, he hits this guy with a chair and the crowd chants one more time. Crews, Apollo Crews is just dying a death right now. He's just, and he's a talented guy. He is a talented guy. But him and then Kalisto came out to make the save and Dolph hit him with a chair. Crowd wanted more. This sucks. I just think this whole thing sucks. And Brian, on top of everything, Brian then makes a handicap match for the pay-per-view tonight where the heel, who actually gets cheered, has to overcome the two baby faces who nobody cares about. Everything about this program is ass backwards. Renee Young hosted the first ever dual contract signing with Alexa Bliss, Mickie James, Naomi, and Becky Lynch for their respective matches at Elimination Chamber. I thought Alexa was just fantastic here. I loved how after she got done talking crap about Becky, she looked over and noticed Naomi and she's like, oh, I almost forgot about you. I'll take care of you this Sunday. And she signed the contract. The one woman with the light show for an entrance who literally glows in the dark on her way to the ring and Alexa didn't even notice her. So it broke down into a giant brawl with Naomi doing a big dive out onto everybody. Naomi finally has her match. This has been a long time coming. I don't believe that Naomi has had a championship match on pay-per-view before, unless it was some kind of multi-woman match. I could be completely wrong about that, but if there was, I don't remember it. She certainly has not been the focal point of a program like this, going for the championship. I know she got hurt, I think, a couple of times. So she's finally getting her match, and she's always been passed over for it. Now she finally has one. And she has practically no chance of winning tonight, nor should she. But she'll have her moment to shine, and we'll see what she does with it. Hopefully she makes the most of it. We had a 12-man tag, American Alpha, the Usos, the Ascension, the Vaudevillains, Heat Slater and Rhino, and Breezango. And the Ascension actually scored the winning fall. Victor pinned Rhino with a flying knee off the second rope. I could not believe my eyes. Even a blind beaver finds a log every now and then. Isn't that right, Kevin? I'll never get tired of that. Then it was time. It was time for John Cena versus Randy Orton. Bray Wyatt was sitting out there in his rocking chair. He had a front row seat for this. Cena kicked out of an RKO. Randy kicked out of an AA. Cena went for another one. Ref got bumped out of the ring accidentally. So he gets Orton in the STF, and Orton immediately taps out. But there's no referee. So Bray Wyatt gets involved. He ends up laying out John Cena with Sister Abigail. That's when Luke Harper shows up. He lays out Bray with a discus clothesline. Cena gives Orton another AA, and this time the referee counted the three. So John Cena pins the 2017 Royal Rumble winner clean in the middle, as if you needed another reason why this match is not going to be your WrestleMania main event. Because we just saw it. Match was fine. I'm not going to crap on it other than I just didn't want to see it and I don't want to see it. But the match itself I thought was fine. But it could be another 2 or 3 years before we see it again and I would be perfectly happy.
I'm actually not wearing pants and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT, this was Nigel McGuinness's first night on commentary. I thought he did fine. Nothing really stands out to me. Sanity took on the Bollywood Boys. This is our first look at Big Damo as the newly rechristened Killian Dane in action. And it was all Killian Dane. Alexander Wolf never tagged in, never had to. Dane ran these two poor bastards over like a Mack truck. Got some shave your back. You know what he reminds me of? He looks exactly like Roadblock. I don't mean the pay-per-view. I mean the WCW guy. He was also a Loch Ness. He looks like his body, his frame, looks like Loch Ness, only he's got more talent than he did. So you got a lot of shave your back chants. I'm sure head trainer Matt Bloom can give him some advice on how to deal with those. He powerbombed one of the Bollywood boys onto his brother, the same spot that the authors of Pain use when they concussed that jobber a while back. And he then used Kenny Omega's one-winged angel to finish them off. So Eric Young cut a promo after the match, once again telling Ty Dillinger, who he beat at TakeOver, that he belongs in Sanity. See what I did there? Insanity. See, this is why we won Show of the Year. It's content like that. Liv Morgan pinned Billie Kay with a roll-up. I should say the roll-up. After Billie accidentally knocked her partner Peyton Royce off the apron when Peyton jumped up there. This was not a good match. Billie and Peyton barged into William Regal's office after the afterwards. And they demanded a rematch against Liv, and he granted their request, but he said this time Liv will get to pick a partner of her choosing. And they both laughed and said, she has no friends. So obviously it's going to end up being either Asuka or Ember Moon. If I had a bet, I would say Asuka, but we'll see. Regal was in his office, by the way, to announce that next week on NXT, the new WWE United Kingdom champion Tyler Bate will defend his title against Trent Seven, another participant from the UK tournament, another progress guy. So I guess that answers the question about whether or not the UK title is going to be defended here in the States or be defended on WWE television. The answer is yes. It could very well end up being that secondary title on NXT that people keep asking me about in the mailbag. Unless they get their own UK show up and running soon on the network, that UK title might be the secondary belt here on this brand. Ty Dillinger was backstage responding to Eric Young's offer when Sanity attacked. They brawled out into the arena. They were all ganging up on this guy when No Way Jose and Roderick Strong came to the rescue. That set up a six-man tag team main event for later in the show. We then got the Revival, who are apparently sticking around, at least through Mania weekend. It's looking like a three-way at the next TakeOver show with DIY, the Revival, and the Authors of Pain. They took on Heavy Machinery, one of my favorite teams in all of wrestling, the team of Tucker Knight and Otis Dojovic. I was so happy when these guys walked out. We have not seen them on TV in months. They had maybe one match on TV. I think it was back in the Dusty Classic, and I still remember those guys. The fact that I still remember them speaks volumes. They came out there. I remember the first time they came out there. They were just having fun. They were in the ring having fun, but they're big dudes, so they're like throwing guys around. This Otis guy, especially, something about him. He's a lot of fun to watch. So, I like these guys from the moment I first saw them as a team. Dojovic, this is the guy who took the bronze in the Pan American Games. To say this guy has a unique look really doesn't do him justice. He reminds me in a way of, the other guy they have down. Oh, Dylan Miley. And by the way, you know, if you remember, it might have been the prediction show last year. I was talking about developmental guys to watch out for, and I mentioned Dylan Miley's name, and we've heard nothing about this guy ever since, but he's still down there. And I still think that he's going to make his way up, and he's going to end up being a star, and you got to remember that name and watch out for him, because Dylan Miley, it's like they're hiding him away. And yeah, maybe for good reason. You know, again, he may not be ready. Maybe they've got big plans for him. I don't know, but Dylan Miley is just this freakish looking guy. And if he's any good at all in the ring, and I don't really remember seeing him wrestle, but if he's any good, he's going to be somebody to watch out for. And Otis is kind of unique in his own way. Unfortunately, these guys were up against the Revival, so you knew that it wasn't going to end well. It was all Tucker Knight. He really shined in this match, not Dojovic, although they did do a cool spot at the start where Tucker Knight had Dash Wilder in a bear hug, and he just throws him into the arms of Dojovic and catches him for a bear hug. It's like they continued the same bear hug. They could have passed him back and forth. That would have been cool. So Dawson finished off Knight with a DDT in the middle. After the match, the Revival cut a promo. The Authors of Pain came out with Paul Ellering, and as soon as they hit the ring, Dash and Dawson bailed. You know, I watched these two guys lumber down to the ring. Akam and Razor and Toka, as I like to call them. And I forget, they're only 22 years old. Like, one is 22, I think the other's actually 23. but they're really, really young. And I don't know that they look that young, but they are. It's easy to forget that. So they walked back up the ramp, and when they turned their backs, the Revival came back out, and they attacked them from behind, and then realizing that they wanted to live, they ran away before they could be slaughtered or eaten. Bobby Roode had a glorious celebration as the new NXT champion. He said that he's not the kind of guy to say, "I told you so," but who am I kidding? That's exactly the kind of guy I am. And he said this as he cackled. He and Shinsuke Nakamura dominated, he said that Shinsuke dominated Japan for the last decade, and he reminded all of the idiots at Full Sail that a decade is 10 years. And it was also a faction in Ring of Honor for a while, just so you know. He said Nakamura even hit him with the Kinshasa, and that still was not enough to get the job done. He said that it's not about "this is NXT anymore." He said, "this is my NXT." I thought this was the best Bobby Roode promo since he debuted. This was Bobby Roode at his best. Very TNA-esque Bobby Roode here. Sanity against Ty Dillinger, Roderick Strong, and No Way Jose in the main event. They beat on Dillinger for a while. He got the hot tag to Roddy. Roddy ran wild. Sick kick to Eric Young. Killian Dane reached in. He tripped up Roddy. Meanwhile, Dillinger hit the tiebreaker on EY, but Nikki Cross got involved and gave Dillinger a Hurricanrana over the top rope. Both fell out of the ring. The referee's attention now is diverted. Roddy turns around. He gets crushed by a running body block by Killian Dane. Just ran him over. It's a move we've seen Bray Wyatt use many times. Which is appropriate because Dane looks like he should belong in the Wyatt family. So he wiped out Strong and he got pinned by Eric Young, and that's how we went off the air. So NXT trudging along as we head towards Orlando. There's not as much buzz, for sure, around NXT these days as there was even 6 months ago. But again, they're rebuilding because they've lost guys. Guys have gotten hurt. It's tough. It's tough. And if they were booking a bad show, if they were booking a show that's just tough to sit through, then that'd be a different story. I can't say that NXT is tough. And it's probably because it's only 48 minutes or 50 minutes. It's not tough to sit through. It would be tough if it were 2 hours. With this roster, it would be very tough. But it's an hour long, and I enjoy more than I don't when it comes to the stuff on the show. But NXT is not what it used to be. There's no question about that. And post-WrestleMania, more than anything, I think, because we'll see who they call up. They may lose another one or two big names in the next month or two. Can they replenish the reserves? Right, we have yet to see Cassius Ohno come back on TV, like in an actual role. We saw him a week or two back in a backstage thing, dressed in a suit and tie, but we haven't seen him back on TV yet. I think he'll probably be in a pretty prominent role once he comes back. But who else? Who else is there? Right, there's got to be more than just Cassius Ohno. And post-WrestleMania, I think, is when we can really begin to judge it, because we'll see who they lost, and we'll see who they get in return. Some miscellaneous notes in wrestling. We have WWE releasing its quarterly numbers this past week, and they had record revenue in 2016, $729 million to be exact, the highest in company history. Profits are not, but the revenue is. And so the next time you wonder, well, why don't they do this? Why don't they do that? Why are they booking this? Why are they? They're making more money now than ever before. That's all that matters to them. So schmucks like you and I, we can rant and rave all day long about all the stupid shit they do. But if you're buying the tickets and you're buying the network and you're buying this and you're buying that and they have record revenue, then they don't give a fuck. Also, on that investor call was quite the admission, I thought, from Vince McMahon. Not that it's a big deal, but I don't believe I've ever heard him admit this sort of thing publicly before. I know he once told Dave Meltzer many, many years ago that the attendance numbers they announce on TV are part of the entertainment. That's a direct quote. But he admitted here on this call that the 101,000 attendance figure, the record-setting 101,000 figure they announced on TV for WrestleMania 32, was not the paid number. They would not disclose what the actual paid attendance was. And that what he said also was that that number did include ushers and ticket takers and other event staff. And I saw something on the website Fightful.com that estimated the legit number, the legit paid attendance to be And it's a pretty big range, but to be somewhere between 73 and 85,000. They got that, looking at the numbers that WWE did provide, they crunched the numbers and somehow they ended up with that range. So the actual attendance was somewhere between 73 and 85, which is still very impressive. But again, it goes to things I've said this over and over again. When you hear WWE give an attendance figure for a WrestleMania, I can't speak for other events or even the Rumble they just did. They claimed 50,000 or 51 or 52, I think. I'm talking WrestleMania. When WWE announces an attendance number for WrestleMania, and you think to yourself, gee, I wonder what the legit number is. Like, the fans in the crowd, what is the legitimate number? It's probably wise to take whatever number they give and subtract 10 to 15,000 when they're in these big stadiums, because that's what they do. And look, they knew the minute they booked that building in Dallas, a year in advance, they knew they were going to break the WrestleMania 3 record no matter what. It was never a matter of, well, you know, can we get there? Can we do it? It was how far over the 93,000 number do we want to go? That record was falling one way or the other. Jeff Jarrett has all but taken over behind the scenes in TNA, so he is in fact back in power. He is no longer just a consultant. He has got his old hands back with him too, Dutch Mantel and Scott D'Amore. All he needs now is Russo, and they'll have the band back together. The Hardys, by the way, still have not signed new deals with TNA, which I think is very interesting, because I believe, I don't know if it's one or both, maybe Matt's contract is supposedly up at the very end of this month. I don't know about Jeff. They probably are going to end up still in TNA, but the fact that they still have not re-signed, I think, should trouble people over in TNA and over at Anthem, because those are two guys that if I'm them, I'm getting those guys locked up for at least another year or two. Spike TV, which I guess is, it's actually Spike. It's not, it hasn't been Spike TV in a while. Well, it's not going to be Spike anymore either, because the network is being rebranded as the Paramount Network. They had Raw for many years, then they had TNA Impact. Changing names now for what? Probably the fourth or fifth time, I think. First it was the Nashville Network, which I never had any interest in watching. Then they rebranded as Pop TV. That was when Raw came over. Remember those god-awful ad campaign? Wait, TNN, we've got Pop, we've got Pop. I heard that in my sleep, like fucking nightmares. So we had Pop TV, and yeah, that worked out real well for them. Then they went from Pop to Spike TV, then just Spike, and now the Paramount Network. This network has gone through more name changes than Ed Leslie. Former ECW announcer and Raw General Manager Mike Adamly has been diagnosed with dementia and has all of the telltale signs of CTE, although they can't technically diagnose him with CTE because you have to be dead. They have yet to devise a way to diagnose CTE in people who are still living. But he revealed this week he has been suffering from post-traumatic epilepsy for the past 19 years. He's had seizures, which his neurologist attributes to his many years on the football field. I think he played like 6 or 7 years in the NFL. I know he played for the Jets. He played for the Bears. He was doing sports reports. He was a news anchor. He was doing sports reports on the local news in Chicago until March of last year, and they took him off the air. Or maybe he took himself off the air. So the viewers had been wondering, like, what happened to Mike? Where's Adamly? And so his station did a news report updating people. He was ready to go public with what he has been going through, and he came forward, and it's really sad. I mean, he can't work. He can't drive. He has to wear a fanny pack everywhere he goes. He has to make sure he's got his ID, his keys, and his phone in there in case he gets lost or he forgets where he is. It's terrible. It's terrible. I knew Mike Adamly from his stint as co-host of American Gladiators. I used to love that show. Him and Larry Zonka. They were the hosts of American Gladiators. I used to watch it all the time. Superstars, where I am here on Channel 5 in New York, would air at 12. And then at 1 p.m., American Gladiators would come on, and I would watch. So I watched that entire two-hour block every single week, just about. And when he came to WWE in 2008, I was excited because I remembered him from American Gladiators. I had completely forgotten about the guy, and it's like Mike Adamly. They just signed him as an announcer. I'm like, man, I used to watch him back in the day. That's awesome. And then on his very first night, he calls Jeff Hardy Jeff Harvey. And from there, it was a steady stream of fuck-ups every single week. He was, as an announcer, he was so bad. He was so bad as an announcer. So they got him out of that role finally after a while. They made him the Raw general manager. And that failed. They basically, all of the fuck-ups, they turned it into his gimmick. They said, we may as well run with this. Instead of just firing him, and they turned it into his gimmick. But you look back on that period now, you know, if he says he's been having seizures, for example, for the last 19 years, stands to reason that while he was in WWE, he was probably already in the early stages, at least, of the dementia and whatever else he's got going on. You know, the memory loss and all that. It's no wonder he couldn't remember his lines. They literally had to send him out there when he was the GM. I don't know if you remember this, but when he was the GM, he had a script in his hands almost every single week. He would literally have the physical script of what he was supposed to, and look down. He didn't even attempt to mask it because he couldn't remember his lines. So he had the script in his hand, he put his glasses on, he would look down, he would read from a piece of paper what he was supposed to say. And it kind of makes sense now looking back on that. You know, Mick Foley is not nearly as bad as Mike Adamly in the general manager role, but I sometimes think the same thing about Foley when I see some of these performances of his. I mean, Foley can have a week or two where he's on. He's really good, they give him something, or you know, he speaks up really passionately, and it's like, wow, that was a great kind of old-school Mick Foley promo. And Foley can do he can still cut a great promo. He doesn't need to read from a script. I mean, I know they kind of made it his gimmick now where he writes the name of the city on his hand, but you know, Foley worries me a lot. And I hear a story like this, and here's one ex-Raw GM who's going through this, and he's had the concussions, God knows how many, and the head issues, and we see what Mike Adamly is going through. And, you know, Foley, some of his rocky performances, it just makes you wonder, you know? You think about concussions and CTE and all the stuff he's put himself through. It's terrifying. It really is. It is a terrifying thought. One last note before the mailbag. I thought this was worth mentioning, especially before I was mentioning my childhood watching American Gladiators back in the day. Do you remember the old voiceover before WWE shows in 94, 95? The old signature where it would say, "The World Wrestling Federation for over 50 years, the revolutionary force in sports entertainment," right? I'm sure you all remember that. That guy's voice was all over WWE programming back in the mid-90s. Here's a few other clips.
What emotions beat in the heart of a champion? A sense of power. Euphoria. Or perhaps fear. Knowing full well that tonight could be the very last night he ever enters the ring as champion. WWF Mania. We're jolting than a cup of coffee. And it's 100% caffeine free.
I could listen to that guy all day long. I'm sure you've heard his voice before, even if it's not on a WWE show. And I always used to wonder, you know, who the hell he was, because I would hear his voice on commercials. And yeah, I saw an item in this week's Observer that Jim Fagan had passed away at the age of 72 after a battle with Parkinson's disease. And the item said that he did voiceovers for hype videos on WWE shows back in the 90s. So I thought to myself, that's got to be him. It's got to be the same guy. So I looked him up, and sure enough, that's who it was. He did voiceover work for the NFL. He did voiceover work for the NBA. And he died last month. And I'm glad I was able to finally put a name with the voice. I really do miss those videos they would do with the stock music, with the production music back in the day. It just made those pay-per-view main events feel really dramatic. I love that music. True story. There used to be a website. I don't think it exists anymore. But it was called Beatnik, beatnik.com. And they had an entire catalog of production music. It's all of the music that you would hear. And still to this day, I hear this music used in commercials, bumpers for TV shows. And they always use them on those WWF video packages. On Raw and all the pay-per-views in the mid-90s, you'd hear the same like five songs all the time. And so here on this website, Beatnik, you could buy licenses to, you could, you know, purchase and download the individual songs if you worked in TV or radio production or what have you. Anyway, there was a glitch in the website that you could exploit where they didn't know that all of the music, basically there was a way to access and download the music for free. I don't remember exactly how, but I figured out how to download it. I think it involved taking some code from the URL and cutting and pasting and changing some of the text in the URL. Anyway, whatever it was, I figured it out. When I found out about it, I quickly downloaded as much of that music as I possibly could. So I had an entire library of all of the product. I was only interested in the songs that like I heard on the WWE shows. So I downloaded all of them. And they all had their own name. Carmina Burana and Wake the Dead. Oh God, I'm trying to remember all the names here, but I could probably check. I think I still have them, but anyway, I got the entire library of all those WWE songs. I got until they finally got smart to what was going on and they realized that people were downloading the songs, and so they fixed the glitch. They patched it, but by then it was too late. Haha. Now, of course, today, all you have to do is go on YouTube and all the music is on there. I mean, it's very, you can find all of that music on YouTube. All you kids out there, this was before YouTube. It's hard to believe what we did before YouTube was around. Back then, you'd have to go to the WWF area on AOL. Remember that? Keyword WWF, you go on there and they had a download section and they had chat rooms and you had to go to the download section on AOL. Like, if you wanted to hear a clip from someone's theme song, Steve Austin's music was very popular, incredibly popular back in 96, okay? You'd have to go to the WWF section on AOL, go to the download area, just to download a 30-second clip of Steve Austin's theme. And it wasn't even, like, great quality. It was, like, 96 kbps or something. A 30-second clip of Austin's theme if you wanted to listen to it, until eventually they released it on CD. Then you'd go out and buy the CD. 30 seconds. That's all they would give you. Honestly, I don't know if my dial-up modem could have supported anything more than 30 seconds. I think that 30-second clip probably took an hour to download. I'm not even joking. That was back when to download a photo or a wallpaper for your computer. You would sit there waiting when you opened it, or as it was downloading, you would literally look at it and watch each pixel load. You had to wait for each line of pixels to load before you can actually see the photo. That I don't miss. I don't miss that. And IBM Aptiva, that was my very first computer back in 94. IBM Aptiva. Mailbag time. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Robert from Oviedo, Florida. Of the three wrestling-related movies currently in development, Crossface, the Chris Benoit story, the Andre the Giant biopic, and the recently announced movie about Paige and her family, which are you most interested in seeing? Honestly, none of them. I don't really have this burning interest to see any of them, but the Benoit one, I wouldn't say I'm exactly looking forward to that for obvious reasons. The Andre one, didn't they do a movie about Andre many years ago? I vaguely remember them doing some kind of horrible movie about Andre with some tall guy who didn't even look like him. Am I imagining that? I think they did. I guess of the three, I would say the Page one. Yeah, that made the news this week. The Rock has signed on to appear in and be the executive producer on a movie called Fighting With My Family. It's based off a documentary of the same name that was done many years ago on Paige's family. It's still up on YouTube, actually. If you type in Fighting With My Family, it'll probably be one of the first things that comes up. It's based or loosely going to be based off that. I think this is meant to be a comedy. It's the first, it's kind of a big deal in that it's the first WWE Studios film that Rock, I think, is going to be involved with or appearing in. Which is interesting given, this whole thing is interesting given Paige's status being so up in the air right now with the company. I see now there's talk of her getting into mixed martial arts if she can get out of her WWE contract. Alberto is hooked up with this promotion, Combates Americas, and he's like the president, and what they really want, supposedly, the rumor is, what they really want is for Paige to have her first fight on their first pay-per-view. Which is completely ridiculous. It took CM Punk 2 years to have his first fight, and he got smashed. Okay? Now, Punk is a lot older than Paige, and a lot more beat up than she is, but Paige is coming off neck surgery. I don't know that she's ever had any kind of fighting or MMA experience before. You're going to rush her into her first fight just to get her on pay-per-view? This sounds like a terrible idea. Terrible idea. I mean, what, is Alberto going to be her first opponent? He likes to fight everyone. You know, if they really want to pop a big number on their first pay-per-view, they should book Alberto in a fight against the Ninja Turtle that he fucked up. Nathan asked me this on Twitter. He asked me if I had heard the Marty Elias story about Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker originally being slotted third from the bottom on the WrestleMania 25 card and only supposed to go 15 minutes. Can you believe that shit? Marty Elias works as a referee now for Lucha Underground. He was the referee for the HBK Undertaker match at WrestleMania 25. The greatest match in WrestleMania history. And he was on the Two Man Power Trip podcast. He told that story, and I couldn't believe it. I don't know which is worse, the idea that they would put them on third, or that it would only go 15 minutes. Reminds me of the Rock Triple H ladder match at Madison Square Garden, SummerSlam 98. That match was only supposed to go about 15 minutes, I think. 15 or 18 minutes, just like this one. And I guess they just kept telling the referee in his earpiece to tell them to go home, and Rock and Triple H pretty much were like, fuck off. And they just kept going. And they ended up having like a 25 or a 26 minute match. And they had this classic match. And I guess it cut into the time that Undertaker and Steve Austin had for their main event, which was for the better because that match didn't have to be any longer than it was. But Shawn and Razor did the same thing at WrestleMania 10. And Lanny Poffos told this story. I mean, they went long in their ladder match. They were only supposed to go a certain amount of time. They just kept going. They have this classic match, and what ended up happening was they had this big 10-man tag that was supposed to go on after, and the 10-man tag got bumped off the show. They had the 10-man tag, I think, on Raw the following week. And so, as the story goes, Randy Savage was just beside himself. He was completely hot at both guys for doing that, and when they came back through the curtain, he told them how selfish they were, which they were. That's the definition of being selfish. I'm glad they were, because it was for the good of the show. We got a great match out of it. But yes, they were being selfish. Sucks for the guys who got bumped. But somehow, I think that they had sent those... had they sent Shawn and Undertaker out there at WrestleMania 25 for a 15-minute match, I have a feeling that they would have ended up going as long as they damn well wanted to. They ended up going 30. By the 15-minute mark, those two were just getting warmed up. Joey from Canada, I've heard you praise the awesome six-man tag from Elimination Chamber 2014 between The Shield and the Wyatt family, and rightfully so. Do you think it would have worked if it had been inside the Elimination Chamber and done in a War Games or Lethal Lockdown style, where two guys from opposing teams would start the match, and then the rest would enter the fray at set intervals? It would have been cool to see a throwback to War Games, where the heels would always have the man advantage until the babyfaces would get in to even it up. That's an awesome idea. I championed the whole War Games, bring back War Games for so long, I just stopped doing it because it was obvious they weren't going to bring it back. And Triple H supposedly was always a very big advocate, and he fought for it, and Vince just didn't want to do it. And it might have been Bruce Pritchard on his podcast somewhat recently who may have mentioned this. I don't remember exactly who it was, but they mentioned that the logic in Vince not wanting to do War Games, the big reason why he never wanted to do it, he didn't like the two rings. I guess just logistically, he just did not like having the two rings. And also it wasn't, and we knew this, it wasn't his concept. It was not a WWF idea, and so therefore, we're not going to use it. I always said the Elimination Chamber, from the moment that they debuted that thing on TV, I always said the Elimination Chamber was the bastard child of War Games. It was their answer to War Games. We're not going to do War Games. We'll do it better. And let's create this massive structure, and we'll have guys who enter at intervals, but we'll do it differently, right? War Games, that was always their answer to War Games. But I really thought that having a War Games match, and maybe you could do it with one ring. I mean, maybe there are other ways to do it, but the concept was cool. And I like the way that you just pitched it. You can take the Elimination Chamber and you could have had the two teams and you could have done it in that way. And I think it would have been really cool. I think the Wyatt and the Shield feud, which was far too short, and that match should have culminated at WrestleMania that year instead of what they had the Shield. What would the Shield do? They beat Kane and the New Age Outlaws in like 2 minutes. I mean, what a waste. And we all know what happened to Bray. So that's what they should have built to at WrestleMania, in my opinion. But yeah, no, I think that would have been a very cool idea. And hopefully one of these days, even if it's with the Chamber and they don't do the two rings, hopefully they'll do something like that. Because I think having, you know, the heels go up and the man advantage and the guy chomping at the bit waiting to get in. I mean, they kind of do that now with the pods, I guess. But that visual of the War Games and how it used to be, I just think it's so cool. And I think it would totally work. I mean, maybe logistically they don't like the fact that having two rings, it looks weird, or they'd have to eliminate, you know, rows of seats at ringside and they lose money. So jack up the prices. So what? So if you lose five rows of fans, you know, you jack up the prices for all the other tickets. I mean, look, there are ways around it, you know, or look, there are ways to do it. It's just obvious that Vince was never hot on the concept, and if he's not hot on the concept, then they're not going to do it. Jay from Dallas, Texas. Is Triple H the greatest heel that wrestling has ever seen? I would say no, I don't think he is. I would say he's up there. He's definitely in the conversation. You know, the guy, he had go-away heat with me. I can tell you that during that Reign of Terror in 02, okay? Go-away heat with me. SmackDown was my show. But he was very good at getting people to hate his guts, which is the hallmark of any great heel. Me personally, talking greatest of all time, I'd go with Ric Flair or Vince McMahon. If we're talking wrestling in general, I'd probably have to say Flair. If we're talking WWE specifically, it's Vince McMahon. Evil heel Mr. McMahon is the greatest villain of all time. Healing on the fans all the time. Some of those promos he would cut talking about the little people and that are beneath him. I mean, I had that Vince promo, the Life Sucks and Then You Die promo, in my top 10 list of promos that I did a while back on the podcast. And that might have been number 10 on the list, but Vince had a lot of those. He was, when he was at his peak with that character, man, he was phenomenal. Screwing over the top babyface at every turn. Thing with Vince, though, unlike his daughter, he's never been afraid to get his comeuppance. So in the end, it might take a while, but Vince, they always got their revenge on Vince and made Vince look like an ass. In fact, one time Vince literally had his head shoved into someone's ass. He didn't mind doing that, or getting hit in the head with a bedpan, or peeing his pants, or whatever, you know. He was never afraid to do that. And I think it's always good for the heel to get his in the end. Flair was great at that. So was Vince. I'll throw one more name at you. Jake the Snake. Jake the Snake is also on my list if I made one. Heel Jake from 91-92. One of the best of all time. Jay's got one more here. Can you agree that before Kurt Angle left WWE, he had some pretty great WrestleMania matches? Who can forget the classic between him and Chris Benoit at WrestleMania 17? Or the title match with him and Eddie Guerrero at WrestleMania 20, and of course the match with Shawn at WrestleMania 21. Which was his best, and can Kurt be considered a candidate for the title of Mr. WrestleMania? Kurt's best WrestleMania match was the one against Shawn Michaels. That's one of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time. As far as the Mr. WrestleMania thing, no. No, I wouldn't say he is. He's had some great ones, but when I think Mr. WrestleMania, this name that they came up with, right, this arbitrary name, Mr. WrestleMania, when I think about that, first name that comes to mind for me, Shawn Michaels. If you're talking about matches and performances over and over and over, none did it better on that show than Shawn Michaels. He would be number one. Undertaker, obviously, you know, you think Mr. WrestleMania, he's right behind Shawn. I think Randy Savage, too. I mean, my God, look at the names that guy wrestled on WrestleMania shows. Ricky Steamboat, Ted DiBiase, Hulk Hogan, Dusty Rhodes, Ultimate Warrior, Ric Flair. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. I think Bret Hart also. deserves consideration when you're talking Mr. WrestleMania. Hogan? I mean, without Hogan, there is no WrestleMania. Kurt Angle, as great as he is, he's way down on that list. Sam from Queensland, Australia. Do you think the reason Kurt Angle was not in the Royal Rumble was to save him as a secret opponent for AJ Styles at WrestleMania and then bill it as his very last match? I would love that a lot more than Styles against Shane McMahon. You know what? I would take back all the stuff I've said about WWE here as we head into the chamber tonight and we head into WrestleMania and how Styles looks like the odd man out, right? It looks like Bray's going to get set up with Randy and Cena's probably going to be doing his thing with Nikki against Miz and Maurice. At least that's the rumor. And it just seems like all these different people have their things being set up and seeds being planted for Mania. And I've heard the AJ Shane McMahon rumor, but AJ's just kind of the odd man out here. He'll probably just end up with Shane. And it's a shame because I think you could do a lot more with him. If they ended up doing that, then I would apologize and I would take all of that back because I think that would be a tremendous idea and that would be a big, big match. And it's the match that Kurt wants. Kurt said it recently. If he had to pick one last opponent for one last match, he would pick AJ Styles. Now, do I think it's happening? No, I don't think it's happening, but I love the idea. I still think it's more likely, and I'll mention this now because this rumor popped up from somewhere and everyone's talking about this. I like the idea more so of Angle showing up on Raw the night after WrestleMania to replace Mick Foley as the Raw GM. And if that idea sounds familiar, it's only popping up this week, but if it sounds familiar, it's because you heard it here first on this show back on SoundUp 476 over a month ago when I did the prediction show. Now, what I actually predicted was that Kurt was going to come back to WWE, but it was going to be as the cover boy for the 2K18 video game. That's how I thought he was going to finally be reintroduced back into the family. And then that would lead to more matches and a Hall of Fame induction. So they did the Hall of Fame induction first. But look, he could still be on the cover of 2K18. That prediction could still come true. That's what I predicted. But what I said also was that if Kurt instead comes back to TV first, what, you know, role do I envision for him? I said that I could see him taking over Mick Foley's spot as the GM on Raw the night after WrestleMania, because we all know Mick Foley is not long for that position. Mick Foley himself has said he is not long for that position. Now he's got hip surgery scheduled. I don't know what the date is. I would think he's going to hold off until after Mania, but I don't know that. But he's got that scheduled. That's going to take him off the road anyway for 6 or 8 weeks. It makes perfect sense to get Kurt on TV, to not have him wrestle if they don't want him to wrestle for his own safety, and I don't know if he could pass the physical and all that. We don't know that. It makes sense. But now I see this rumor floating around the last few days about it. I like the idea when I first talked about it 6 weeks ago. I think Kurt should be the new Raw GM. Spencer from Keswick, Ontario. At ECW One Night Stand 2005, the match between Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero felt really off, considering what they could have done. And towards the end, you could see Eddie mouth something. What did Eddie say, and did the match feel off to you? I'd have to go back and see it. I don't remember him mouthing anything. But I agree, that match, it should have been better than it was. And the chemistry they had before. Those two had a U.S. title match at one of those B-shows. I think it was Vengeance. And it was only like 2 or 3 years before the ECW show. So I'm not like going back to their prime when they were at their physical peak. I mean, this was only a couple of years before the ECW One Night Stand match. They had an outstanding U.S. title match, that I thought. And so I had high expectations. And I think it was a case where their reputation was such that people, I shouldn't say everybody was let down. Maybe you thought it was a great match, or people listening thought it was great. It was good. I mean, it was okay, but I remember it ending. Eddie tapped to the crossface and it was over. It was, you know, relatively quick. And I just remember thinking, that's it? Like, I expected a lot more from those two. And yeah, it did feel off to me. I don't know what it was. I know Eddie was physically, we know now, in pretty rough shape at that point. This was only a few months before he passed away. I mean, he was really hurting. Like, physically hurting. That may have had something to do with it. You know, maybe he was hurting and he just couldn't do what he wanted to do. He couldn't do as much as he used to. Brian from Orlando. The week before Raw moved from Spike TV back to USA Network, Spike would keep bleeping out certain parts of the broadcast. Do you know why they would do this? Yeah, because they were dicks. They were trying to bleep out all the mentions of USA Network, and they weren't doing a very good job of it. Basically, they would just hit the button whenever they thought they were about to mention USA. But the thing is, it would slip through anyway. They would hit the button too fast or too late. In WWE, they got hip to what they were doing as the show went on. So what they did was they told the announcers to mention USA over and over and over again, like on commentary. Just keep mentioning, hey, we're going to USA, we're going to USA. And Spike got so tired of it, they just gave up. So they just, after a while, they just stopped bleeping it. It's just like, dude, you may as well just quit. It's not working. James from Staten Island has a buy or sell. Buy or sell. Legend killer Randy Orton or psychotic McMahon killing Randy Orton? Those are the two best Randy Ortons. I'm going to buy on the psychotic McMahon killer, Randy Orton, as being the best. Either that or post-legacy Randy Orton. Orton was on fire during both of those periods. I remember when he vanquished DiBiase and Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania 26 and the legacy thing basically died. He was still a heel. He didn't really do anything to go babyface, but all of a sudden the fans took to this guy like he was the second coming of Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, there was a period from post-WrestleMania 26 for at least 2 or 3 months where Randy Orton was the hottest thing in that company. I remember a match on Raw. It was Cena and Orton against Batista and Jack Swagger. Don't ask me why I remember this, but I do. And it was right in that period. And the end of that match, it starts to break down. Orton gets in. I think Batista ran in to break up a near fall. Orton got up. He gave Batista the RKO. Place went nuts. Swagger came in. Orton leveled him with an RKO, pinned him. Crowd was going nuts. Cena was like a background player in all this, and he was the champion at the time. And they had a little stare down between Cena and Orton, because it's the feud that never fucking dies. But Randy Orton, during that period, I would argue, has never been as hot or as popular as he was during that period. And I don't remember why it fizzled out. I mean, that was the one time where I really looked at Randy Orton. I said, this could be the guy. Like, he could take over the spot from Cena and actually be the guy and not the guy underneath. And it never happened. But I would say that from that period, psychotic McMahon killer Randy Orton and onward is the one I would buy on. Sean from Jersey City. He has two questions. One, is it true the main event of WrestleMania 2000 was going to include Chris Jericho had Mick Foley not come back? That is true. Chris Jericho was originally supposed to be one of the four guys in that WrestleMania main event. Jericho talked about it in his book. It was the second book, I think? Undisputed? Was that the second one? He talked about it in one of his books. He remembers he saw his face on the promotional poster. They had a promotional poster and billboards done that had his face on it. It was him and Triple H and Rock and I'm trying to think. It was Rock, Triple H, Jericho, and Big Show, right? Yeah, it would have been Big Show, not Foley. So Foley was the last minute addition. But he was definitely on the early promotional poster for it. You could probably still find it if you Google it. And I don't remember why. I don't remember him giving the reason why Vince changed his mind. I don't even know if he knows why Vince changed his mind. I mean, Vince changes his mind the way people change lanes on the highway. So who the hell knows? Sean's second question. Why didn't Stone Cold want to drop the title to Triple H at SummerSlam 99, but was willing to lose to him at No Mercy a few months later? I feel like I've talked about this and people have asked this question. And that SummerSlam 99 main event, it's just one of those things, man. I mean, no one seems to know the real story except the players involved, and I don't think they've ever really talked about it. Austin may well have not thought that Triple H was ready for it. He may not have thought that Triple H was on his level and didn't want to lose to him. But again, he lost to him a couple of months later in a singles match, no less, not a triple threat. And then he lost to him in that Three Stages of Hell match, which was only a few months after. Actually, no, what am I saying? Three Stages of Hell was the year after. I take that back. No Mercy was October 99, right. So the Three Stages of Hell was February of 01. And by then, Triple H was absolutely a main eventer. But you're right. You know, he lost to him a couple months later, and seemingly didn't have any issue with it. You know, and what would have happened in the triple threaded Survivor Series 99? Remember, that was supposed to be Rock and Triple H and Austin. But Austin had the neck injury. He got run down and Big Show ended up with the belt. So we'll never know. I think honestly it had more to do with Jesse Ventura. Jesse Ventura was still the governor of Minnesota at the time. It was at the Target Center in Minneapolis. Him being the referee and them not wanting him to count the fall for the heel. I think that's probably what it was. So they had Mankind win instead. Austin didn't have to take the fall in that match. They could have had Triple H pin Foley and win the championship. And Austin wouldn't have had to do, he wouldn't have had to lay down. So the fact that they didn't do it that way tells me it probably had more to do with them just not wanting Jesse to raise the hand of the villain. And he had a little bit of a feud going in the build-up on Raw, you know, with he made at least one appearance on Raw, and Triple H got in his face. So they could have booked it as a swerve. I mean, Jesse always was the heel, where in the end he counts the fall for Triple H and they embrace. But again, I guess in their mind, or maybe in Jesse's mind, hey, I'm the governor and I'm supposed to be cheered and let's not do that. I think that probably had more to do with it than anything. Chris from Pensacola, home of the big dog. If Triple H had not gotten injured in 2001, how could you have seen him being booked during the invasion angle? Strongly. Very, very strongly. I think they were headed... Here's what I think they were headed for. I think they were headed imminently for a split between Triple H and Austin. I think the two-man power trip was coming to an end. Especially after Austin cost them the Intercontinental title against Kane. The next night they lose their tag team titles. That's when he tore his quad and he was gone. But I think they were headed for a split. And I think it would have ended up still with Austin as the heel representing the Alliance. And a babyface Triple H representing kind of Team WWE as its top defender. Or at least 1A and 1B with Rock. I don't know if one had to do with the other, if Rock came back early because Triple H got hurt, or if Rock was going to come back anyway. But I think that's how it would have shaped out. I think it would have ended up with Triple H in the babyface role on the opposing side during the invasion. And it may well have been him standing tall over Austin in the end and not Rock. Dylan from New York. My coworkers and I were talking about an age limit for pro football players. My question is, what is the age restriction for wrestlers? We've seen many guys like Undertaker, Flair, and Hogan compete well after they probably should. Do you think there is a specific age where wrestlers should stop wrestling? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Now, that doesn't mean that guys like the ones you just mentioned should have quit while they were ahead. But you can't put an age... I mean, first of all, age is just a number. It is really just a number. You can't put an age restriction. Like, wrestling is so different. It depends. Look, you could be a wrestler that doesn't do much. If you're a wrestler like Goldberg who comes in and you hit a spear and a jackhammer and that's it, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and that's all you have to do, and you wrestle a couple times a year, you could be 55 years old and still wrestling. So it depends how many matches are you working, what's your schedule like, how broken down is your body. Everybody is different. Some wrestlers are fucking crippled by the time they're 45. And some guys are still wrestling well into their 60s, and they look pretty good. You know, I talked about Chavo Sr. earlier, who passed away this week. I was watching a match. I went back on YouTube. He had a cruiserweight title match on SmackDown in 2004 with Rey Mysterio. So he passed away this year. He was, what, 68? So in 2004, he was in his early to mid-50s. And... granted, the match with Ray, like, literally was, like, 2.5 minutes. But I watched this match and some of the things and the moves he's doing at the beginning, Chavo, and I'm like, holy shit. Like, I wasn't expecting that out of him. And again, he was 50-something years old at that time, and he was still moving around pretty good. Some guys can barely move and they're in their 40s. So how can you say when you turn 40, when you turn 45, you know, you have to stop? Like, you can't do that. Because everybody is different. So I think that would be a terrible idea. Steve from Cork, Ireland. If there was a Royal Rumble made up of former U.S. presidents, who would be the last man standing? Who would get the comedy quick elimination spot? Who would be the Iron Man? I love that it's the guy from Cork who asks the question about U.S. presidents. I find that amusing. Well, let's see here. Abe Lincoln was a wrestler. So how can I vote against the wrestler winning the Royal Rumble? I think Abe would be my pick to win. As far as the comedy spot, let's see. I mean, there have been a lot of presidents who have had their moments where they have they've been the butt of a joke. I mean, I remember the first George Bush, he like vomited on the, he was at like a state dinner, I think, in it might have been Japan. It might have been the Japanese prime minister. He threw up all over him at dinner. He got sick. I mean, everybody has their moments like that. Gerald Ford, like the classic clip of Gerald Ford falling down the steps of Air Force One. That was pretty embarrassing. I would say, comedy spot, I would probably go with George W. Bush. I'm thinking Bush. Bush fell off a Segway. He fell off a Segway. He choked on a pretzel and passed out. He dropped his dog. Remember that? He was meeting, I don't remember what, he was like on the runway or something. He was meeting with like a girls' softball team or a little league team. I don't remember exactly what it was. But all these like young teenage girls are surrounding him, and he's holding his dog Barney. And he drops the dog. And the girls have these looks on their faces like they thought he killed the poor thing. It's like, poor Barney. There's probably been a bunch of other moments with him I'm not even remembering. So I think, look, he'd definitely be the most entertaining. I would give him that. Iron Man, I don't know. I mean, there have been some badasses, though. There have been some really badass presidents. George Washington, my God, I mean, read up on him. The guy, George Washington, once had, oh God, what was it that he had? This was back in the day when people had the, you know, not chlamydia. maybe they did have chlamydia. That's not what I meant to say. I'm thinking like a dysentery. That's what it was. I can't say that George Washington had chlamydia, but I think it was dysentery that he had. He had explosive diarrhea, I think, as the story goes. He was sick as a dog. He was like bedridden for weeks. And it didn't stop him from, he took like a pillow. He put a pillow under his ass. He got up on his horse and he went to go fight the British. Now that's a real man. That's a real man. Andrew Jackson, he's another one. Andrew Jackson was an asshole, but he fought in lots of duels. Dozens of duels, including one where he let the other guy take the first shot. And he got shot. He got shot in the chest, I think. And he still won the duel. Now that's badass. That's a badass guy. Jared from Chicago, buy or sell on who blew it worse? The Atlanta Falcons blowing a 28-3 lead to lose the Super Bowl, or the Cleveland Indians blowing a 3-1 lead to lose the World Series? Oh, man. Those are still fresh in everyone's minds. That's a good one. You know, it's close. I am inclined to buy on the Indians being the bigger collapse, because to lose 3 straight games like that, like the, it's just a matter of format, I think, when you take something like Major League Baseball or the NBA and compare it to the NFL. In the NFL, like, you got to win that game. You're in the playoffs, you're in the Super Bowl. It's one and done. You lose, you're out. Baseball's different. You know, if you have a 7-game series, then you got to win best of 7. So you can have a bad night, you could have a bad game, come back the next day and do it all over again. To lose 3 straight games when you're up 3-1, you got to just win one more and you're the world champion. All they had to do was just win one. And plus, you know, that last game, that game 7, was probably the greatest game I've ever seen. To me, that collapse was more epic. So I'm gonna buy on Cleveland and I'm gonna sell on the Falcons. All right, this week in Sound Off History, got some interesting little callbacks here. Episode 82. This is, of course, episode 482. So we have to go all the way back to episode 82 from September 28th, 2009. I recorded that show on a Monday, a rare Monday Sound Off It was the same Monday that the Reverend Al Sharpton guest hosted Monday Night Raw. As if I needed a reason to cite to hate the guest host concept even more than I already did. I also talked about the upcoming John Cena-Randy Orton match at Hell in a Cell. This coming off their match at Breaking Point. And then they would have another match, an Iron Man match, at Bragging Rights. Some things really don't ever change. They really don't. Although, I have to say, their Breaking Point match and their Bragging Rights matches were really, really good. They were really, really good. I also talked about the rumors. There were rumors going around that Bret Hart might be returning to WWE, which of course he ended up doing a few months later. Episode 182 from October 4th, 2011 was my hour-long interview with wrestling photographer and author George Napolitano. You may not know that name, but George is one of the unsung heroes of the wrestling business. Him and Bill Apter both. I can't tell you how influential they both were on the careers of a lot of guys. Like, I'm not just saying guys, the biggest names in the business. Major influence over the trajectory of many of their careers, including guys like Triple H. And I've had the chance to interview them both, which is super cool for me. But it was George's photos of Triple H, a young Triple H, when he was just out of being trained by Killer Kowalski, and Kowalski was taking Triple H around to different places to get noticed. And it was the photos that George took of him that got noticed by WCW. George still takes photos today, not just for wrestling. He also shoots photos for like other entertainment events and movie premieres and stuff like that. I've become friendly with him over the last several years. I'll be seeing him again in a few months, in fact. And we always end up, you know, the conversation always ends up back to wrestling. If you're a fan of wrestling history, I encourage you to go back and listen to that interview. He was in the Dominican Republic with Ric Flair for his match against Jack Veneno. He was ringside right there on the hard camera when Vince McMahon called for the bell in Montreal, and a lot of other big matches too over the years. We talked in the interview about when and why WWE stopped allowing photographers at ringside, which was kind of interesting. So a lot of good stuff in there. Episode 282 from July 7th, 2013 had a pretty good rant on reality television and what it really should be called. A great main event on TNA Impact and looking at whether or not their gut check concept was a failure. Plus live thoughts from my trip to the TNA Baseball show. Yeah, it's funny to me. Those occasions where people come at me for my opinions on TNA. You're not a real fan. You have no right to talk about TNA. Your opinions don't matter. You've never supported the product or had anything good to say about TNA. It's like, I'd like to point them to shows like this one, just to shut them up. Like, I've had lots of positive things in the past to say about TNA, and I've actually given them a decent amount of my money over the years, so shut the fuck up. I also talked about whether or not a wrestling off-season could work on this episode. And episode 382 from May 10th, 2015 talked about the WWE E60 special and what the future might hold for Adam Rose. Boy, did that go nowhere, didn't it? What a wasted opportunity that was. And Jeff Jarrett reveals his roster for Global Force Wrestling. I know. So don't forget, you can stream or download past episodes of The Sound Off on thesolidmonster.com or iTunes. And you can find the first 10 episodes from almost a decade ago archived for free on our YouTube channel. Don't forget, we have our new shirt up in the Pro Wrestling Tee store, Sound Off Orlando. And if you are planning on being in Orlando, buy the shirt and wear it. Bring it with you. But make sure you don't wait until the last minute. Otherwise, you may not get the shirt in time. So definitely pick that up. Thank you for all the support with the PayPal donations. It was a good week in terms of PayPal. So I thank you for that. Use our Audible link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Get yourself a free book on us. Follow me on Twitter at Solomonster. I'll be live tweeting during the Elimination Chamber tonight, as I usually do for all of these big shows. So if you want to reach me and follow along with me, that is the place to do it. Next weekend is episode 483. I probably will have an Elimination Chamber video review up tonight. I've been doing them for most of the pay-per-view, so I should be able to do one tonight as well, either later tonight or first thing tomorrow morning. That should go up. Now would be a good time to subscribe then to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolomonster is my username on there. Thank you to the 80,000 plus who have watched the Royal Rumble video. That was pretty amazing. I don't know that we'll have as much interest in Elimination Chamber as there was for the Rumble, but definitely subscribe to the channel and get yourself some Sound Off extra bonus content on there. If 2 hours of the Sound Off is not enough for you, you'll be a big fan of those extras. And always remember, because there's still a lot of people that have no idea about this, and I don't know how that's possible because I mention it every chance I get, but I'll mention it again. For the people who are upset that the reviews don't get pushed out all the time to the feed, like on occasion they will be, maybe on a delay of a couple of days, but that channel is reserved for bonus content. I want people to go to that channel to get the bonus content and to subscribe. And it defeats the entire purpose of doing that if every single time I do a review or every single time I do an extra, I just push it out to the feed. So not all, but a lot of the content is YouTube exclusive. It doesn't mean you can't download it. I go and put an MP3 in every single video description for these things. And if I do a video tonight, that will be no exception. So if you have you're limited on data on your mobile device, as I am, I only have 2 gigs on mine, I can't be watching YouTube videos, cool. Just go into the video description, grab the link, right-click Save As, and you can download the MP3 to your device. But that link is in there for every single video, but you got to go to the video first to get it. So always remember that. We'll be back next weekend for 483. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and we'll see you back here for more Sound Off real soon. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off. What?
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the Big Show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Monster Sounds Off. Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.